Later that evening, Vin still couldn't believe how eager she was to go to the ball. She stood in her room, looking over the different gown ensembles the Dachshund had found for her. Since she had been forced to wear noblewoman's attire for a good month straight, she was beginning to find dresses just a shade more comfortable than she once had.
Not that they aren't frivolous, of course.
She inspected the four gowns.
All of that lace, the layers of material, a simple shirt and trousers are so much more practical.
Yet there was something special about the gowns, something in their beauty, like the gardens outside. When regarded as static items, like a solitary plant, the dresses were only mildly impressive. However, when she considered attending the ball, the gowns took on a new meaning. They were beautiful, and they would make her beautiful. They were the face she would show to the court, and she wanted to choose the right one.
I wonder if Elland will be there. Didn't Sazed say that most of the younger aristocrats attended every ball?
She lay a hand on one dress, black with silver embroiderings. It would match her hair, but was it too dark? Most of the other women wore colorful dresses. Muted colors seemed reserved for men's suits. She eyed a yellow gown, but it just seemed a little too perky. And the white one was too ornate. That left the red. The neckline was lower, not that she had a lot to show, but it was beautiful. A bit gossamer, with full sleeves that were made of translucent mesh in places, it enticed her. But it seemed so blatant. She picked it up, feeling the soft material in her fingers, imagining herself wearing it.
How did I get to this? This thing would be impossible to hide in. These frilly creations, these aren't me.
And yet, part of her longed to be back at the ball again. The daily life of a noblewoman frustrated her, but her memories of that one night were alluring. The beautiful couples dancing, the perfect atmosphere and music, the marvelous crystalline windows.
Huh. I don't even realize when I'm wearing perfume anymore.
She found it preferable to bathe in scented water each day, and the servants even perfumed her clothing. It was all subtle, of course, but it would be enough to give her away while sneaking. Her hair had grown longer and had been carefully cut by Renault's stylist so that it fell around her ears, curling just slightly. She no longer looked quite so scrawny in the mirror, despite her lengthy sickness. Regular meals had filled her out.
I'm becoming.
Vin didn't know what she was becoming. Certainly not a noblewoman. Noblewomen didn't get annoyed when they couldn't go out stalking at night. Yet she wasn't really Vin the urchin anymore. She was
Mistborn.
Vin carefully laid the beautiful red dress back on her bed, then crossed the room to look out the window. The sun was close to setting. Soon the mists would come, though as usual, Sazed would have guards posted to make certain that she didn't go on any unauthorized alimentic romps. She hadn't complained at the precautions. He was right. Unwatched, she probably would have broken her promise long ago. She caught a glimpse of motion to her right, and could just barely make out a figure standing out on the garden balcony. Kelsier. Vin stood for a moment, then left her rooms. Kelsier turned as she walked onto the balcony. She paused, not wanting to interrupt, but he gave her one of his characteristic smiles. She walked forward, joining him at the carved stone balcony railing. He turned and looked westward. Not at the grounds, but beyond them, toward the wilderness, lit by a setting sun outside of town.
Does it ever look wrong to you, Vin?
Wrong?
The dry plants, the angry sun, the smoky black sky?
How can those things be right or wrong? That's just the way things are.
I suppose. But I think your mindset is part of the wrongness. The world shouldn't look like this.
How do you know that?
Kelsier reached into his vest pocket and pulled out a piece of paper. He unfolded it with a gentle touch, then handed it to Vin. She accepted the sheet, holding it carefully. It was so old and worn that it seemed close to breaking at the creases. It didn't contain any words, just an old, faded picture. It depicted a strange shape, something like a plant, though not one Vin had ever seen. It was too flimsy. It didn't have a thick stalk, and its leaves were far too delicate. At its top, it had a strange collection of leaves that were a different color from the rest.
It's called a flower. They used to grow on plants before the ascension. Descriptions of them appear in the old poems and stories. Things that only keepers and rebel sages know about anymore. Apparently, these plants were beautiful, and they had a pleasant smell.
Plants that smell like fruit?
Something like that, I think. Some of the reports even claim that these flowers grew into fruit in the days before the Ascension.
Vin stood quietly, frowning, trying to imagine such a thing.
That picture belonged to my wife, Mare. Doxson found it in her things after we were taken. He kept it, hoping that we would return. He gave it to me after I escaped.
Vin looked down at the picture again.
Mare was fascinated by pre-Ascension times. She collected things like that paper, pictures and descriptions of the old times. I think that fascination, along with the fact that she was a Tinai, is part of what led her to the underground and to me. She's the one who first introduced me to Sazed, though I didn't use him in my crew at the time. He wasn't interested in thieving.
Vin folded up the paper.
And you keep this picture still? After what she did to you?
Been listening at doors again, have we? Oh, don't worry. I suppose it's common enough knowledge.
In the distance, the setting sun became a blaze, its ruddy light illuminating clouds and smoke alike.
Yes, I keep the flower. I'm not really sure why. But do you stop loving someone just because they betray you? I don't think so. That's what makes the betrayal hurt so much. Pain, frustration, anger. And I still loved her. I still do.
How? How can you? And how can you possibly trust people? Didn't you learn from what she did to you?
I think given the choice between loving Mare, betrayal included, and never knowing her, I choose love. I risked and I lost, but the risk was still worth it. It's the same with my friends. Suspicion is healthy in our profession, but only to an extent. I'd rather trust my men than worry about what will happen if they turn on me.
That sounds foolish.
Is happiness foolish?
Kelsier turned toward her.
Where have you been happier, Vin? On my crew or back with Kamen? I don't know for sure if Mare betrayed me.
Kelsier looked back at the sunset.
She always claimed that she didn't.
And she was sent to the pits, right? That doesn't make sense if she sided with the Lord Ruler.
She showed up at the pits a few weeks after I was sent there. We were separated after we were caught. I don't know what happened during that time or why she was eventually sent to Hathsin. The fact that she was sent to die hints that maybe she didn't really betray me, but...
He turned toward Vin.
You didn't hear him when he caught us, Vin. The Lord Ruler. He thanked her. Thanked her for betraying me. His words, spoken with such an eerie sense of honesty, mixed with the way that the plan was set up, well, it was hard to believe, Mare. That didn't change my love, though. Not deep down. I nearly died when she did a year later, beaten before the slave masters at the pits. That night, after her corpse was taken away, I snapped.
You went mad?
No. Snapping is an allomantic term. Our powers are latent at first. They only come out after some traumatic event. Something intense. Something almost deadly. The philosophers say that a man can't command the metals until he has seen death and rejected it.
So, when did it happen to me?
It's hard to tell. Growing up as you did, there were probably ample opportunities for you to snap. For me, it was that night. Alone in the pits, my arms bleeding from the day's work. Mare was dead, and I feared that I was responsible, that my lack of faith took away her strength and will. She died knowing that I questioned her loyalty. Maybe if I'd really loved her, I wouldn't have ever questioned. I don't know.
But you didn't die.
I decided that I'd see her dream fulfilled. I'd make a world where flowers returned. A world with green plants. A world where no soot fell from the sky. I know. I'm insane.
Actually, it kind of makes sense. Finally.
Kelsier smiled. The sun sank beneath the horizon, and while its light was still a flare in the west, the mists began to appear. They didn't come from one specific place, they just sort of grew. They extended like translucent twisting vines in the sky, curling back and forth, lengthening, dancing, melding.
Mare wanted children. Back when we were first married a decade and a half ago, I didn't agree with her. I wanted to become the most famous ska thief of all time and didn't have time for things that would slow me down. It's probably a good thing that we didn't have children. The Lord Ruler might have found and killed them. But he might not have. Dox and the others survived. Now, sometimes, I wish that I had a piece of her with me. A child. A daughter, perhaps. With Mari's same dark hair and resilient stubbornness.
Kelsier looked down at Vin.
I don't want to be responsible for something happening to you, Vin. Not again.
I'm not spending any more time locked in this mansion.
No, I don't suppose you will. If we try and keep you in much longer, you'll probably just show up at Clubs' shop one night having done something very foolish. We're a bit too much alike that way, you and I. Just be careful.
I will.
They stood for a few more minutes, watching the mists gather. Finally, Kelsier stood up straight, stretching.
Well, for what it's worth, I'm glad you decided to join us, Finn.
To tell you the truth, I'd kind of like to see one of those flowers for myself. You could say that circumstances forced me to leave my home behind. Certainly, if I had stayed, I would now be dead. During those days, running without knowing why, carrying a burden I didn't understand, I assumed that I would lose myself in Helenium and seek a life of indistinction. I am slowly coming to understand that anonymity, like so many other things, has already been lost to me forever.
Vin decided to wear the red dress. It was definitely the boldest choice, but that felt right. After all, she hid her true self behind an aristocratic appearance. The more visible that appearance was, the easier it should be for her to hide. A footman opened the carriage door. Vin accepted the footman's hand and climbed down. She straightened her dress, nodded to Sazed, then joined the other aristocrats, making their way up the steps to Keep Alariel. It was a bit smaller than the Keep of House Venture. However, Keep Alariel apparently had a separate party ballroom, while House Venture had its gatherings in the enormous main hall. Vin eyed the other noblewomen and felt a bit of her confidence vanish. Her dress was beautiful, but the other women had so much more than just gowns. Their long, flowing hair and self-assured airs matched their bejeweled figures. They filled out the upper portions of their dresses with voluptuous curves and moved elegantly in the frilled splendor of the lower folds. Vin occasionally caught glimpses of the women's feet, and they didn't wear simple slippers like her own, but rather high-heeled shoes.
Why don't I have shoes like that?
They climbed the carpet-covered stairs.
Heels take practice to walk in, mistress. Since you've only just learned to dance, it might be best you wore regular shoes for a time.
Vin frowned but accepted the explanation. Sazed's mention of dancing, however, increased her discomfort. She remembered the flowing poise of the dancers at her last ball. She certainly wouldn't be able to imitate that. She barely even knew the basic steps.
That won't matter. They won't see me. They'll see Lady Valette. She's supposed to be new and uncertain, and everyone thinks she's been ill lately. It'll make sense for her to be a poor dancer.
That thought in mind, Vin reached the top of the stairs, feeling a bit more secure.
I must say, mistress, you seem far less nervous this time. In fact, you even seem excited. This is the proper attitude for Valette to display, I think.
Thank you.
He was right. She was excited. Excited to be part of the job again. Excited even to be back among the nobility with their splendor and grace. They stepped up to the squat ballroom building, one of several low wings extending from the main keep, and a servant took her shawl. Vin paused a moment just inside the doorway, waiting as Sazed arranged her table and meal. The Ilariel ballroom was very different from the majestic Venture Grand Hall. The dim room was only a single story high, and while it had a lot of stained glass windows, they were all in the ceiling. Circular rose window skylights shone from above, lit by small limelights on the roof. Each table was set with candles, and despite the light from above, there was a reserved darkness about the room. It seemed private, despite the numerous people in attendance. This room had obviously been designed to accommodate parties. A sunken dancing floor lay at its center, and this was better lit than the rest of the room. There were two tiers of tables circling the dancing floor. The first tier was only a few feet above. The other was farther back and about twice as high. A servant led her to a table at the rim of the room. She sat, Sazed taking his customary place behind her, and began to wait for her meal to arrive.
How exactly am I supposed to get the information Kelsier wants?
Vin scanned the dark room. The deep crystalline colors from above projected patterns across tables and people, creating an impressive atmosphere, yet making it difficult to distinguish faces. Was Elend here somewhere amidst the ballgoers?
Tonight, some of the men should ask you to dance. Accept their invitations. This will give you an excuse to seek them out later and mingle in their groups. You don't need to participate in conversations. You just have to listen. At future balls, perhaps some of the young men will begin to ask you to accompany them. Then you'll be able to sit at their table and listen to all of their discussions.
You mean, sit with one man the entire time?
It's not uncommon. You would dance only with him that night as well.
Vin frowned. However, she let the matter drop, turning to inspect the room again.
He's probably not even here. He said he avoided balls when possible. Even if he were here, he'd be off on his own. He won't even...
Vin turned to see Elend Venture pulling over a chair, then sitting down. He leaned back in the chair, angling toward a candelabrum beside her table, and opened a book to begin reading. Sazed frowned. Vin had a smile, eyeing Elend. He still didn't look as if he had bothered to brush his hair, and again wore his suit without the buttons done up. The garment wasn't shabby, but nor was it as rich as others at the party. It seemed to have been tailored to be loose and relaxed, defying the traditional sharp, well-cut fashion. Elend flipped through his book. Vin waited patiently for him to acknowledge her, but he just continued to read. Finally, Vin raised an eyebrow.
I don't remember giving you permission to sit at my table, Lord Venture.
Don't mind me. You've got a big table. There's plenty of room for both of us.
Both of us, perhaps, but I'm not sure about those books. Where are the servers going to put my meal?
There's a bit of space to your left.
Sazed's frown deepened. He stepped forward, gathering up the books and setting them on the floor beside Elend's chair. Elend continued to read. He did, however, raise a hand to gesture.
See, now, that's why I don't ever use Terraceman servants. They're an insufferably efficient lot, I must say.
Sazed is hardly insufferable. He is a good friend and is probably a better man than you will ever be, Lord Venture.
Elend finally looked up.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Vin nodded. Elend, however, opened his book and began reading again.
Why sit with me if he's just going to read?
What did you do at these parties before you had me to pester?
See now, how can I be pestering you? I mean, really, Valette, I'm just sitting here reading quietly to myself.
At my table. I'm certain you could get your own. You're the Venture heir. Not that you were forthcoming about that fact during our last meeting.
True. I do, however, recall telling you that the Ventures were an annoying lot. I'm just trying to live up to the description.
You're the one that made up the description.
Convenient, that.
Elend smiled slightly as he read. Elend peeked up over his book.
That's a stunning dress. It's almost as beautiful as you are.
Vin froze, jaw hanging open slightly. Elend smiled mischievously, then turned back to his book, eyes sparkling as if to indicate that he'd made the comment simply because he knew the reaction he'd get. Sazed loomed over the table, not bothering to mask his disapproval. Yet he said nothing. Elend was obviously too important to be chastised by a simple steward.
How is it, Lord Venture, that an eligible man like yourself comes to these balls alone?
Oh, I don't. My family usually has one girl or another lined up to accompany me. Tonight's fare is the Lady Stace Blanche. She's the one in the green dress sitting on the lower tier across from us.
Vin glanced across the room. Lady Blanche was a gorgeous blonde woman. She kept glancing up at Vin's table, covering a scowl. Vin flushed, turning away.
Shouldn't you be down there with her?
Probably. But see, I'll tell you a secret. The truth is, I'm not really much of a gentleman. Besides, I didn't invite her. It wasn't until I got into the carriage that I was informed regarding my accompaniment.
I see.
My behavior is, nonetheless, deplorable. Unfortunately, I'm quite prone to such bouts of deplorability. Take, for instance, my fondness for reading books at the dinner table. Excuse me a moment, I'm going to get something to drink.
He stood, tucking the book into his pocket, and walked toward one of the room's bar tables. Vin watched him go, both annoyed and bemused.
This is not good, mistress.
He's not that bad.
He's using you, mistress. Lord Venture is infamous for his unconventional, disobedient attitude. Many people dislike him, precisely because he does things like this.
Like this?
He is sitting with you because he knows that it will annoy his family. Oh, child, I do not wish to bring you pain, but you must understand the ways of the court. This young man is not romantically interested in you. He is a young, arrogant lord who chafes at his father's restrictions, so he rebels, acting rude and offensive. He knows that his father will relent if he acts spoiled enough for long enough.
Vin felt her stomach twist. Sazed was probably right, of course.
Why else would Ellen seek me out? I'm exactly what he needs. Someone lowborn enough to annoy his father, but inexperienced enough not to see the truth.
Her meal arrived, but Vin didn't have much of an appetite anymore. She began to pick at the food as Ellen returned, settling down with a large goblet filled with some mixed drink.
Let's see how he reacts if I don't interrupt his reading.
Vin remembered her lessons and ate her food with a lady's grace. It wasn't a large meal, mostly some rich buttered vegetables, and the sooner she finished, the sooner she could get to dancing. At least then she wouldn't have to sit with Ellen Venture. The young lord paused several times as she ate, peeking at her over the top of his book. He obviously expected her to say something, but she never did. As she ate, however, her anger faded. She glanced at Ellen, studying his slightly disheveled appearance, watching the earnestness with which he read his book. Could this man really hide the twisted sense of manipulation Sazed implied? Was he really just using her?
Anyone will betray you. Everyone will betray you.
Ellen just seemed so genuine. He felt like a real person, not a front or a face. And it did seem like he wanted her to talk to him. It felt like a personal victory to Vin when he finally set the book down and looked at her.
Why are you here, Follett?
Here at the party?
No, here in Luthad, though.
Because it's the center of everything.
I suppose it is. But the Empire is a big place to have such a small center. I don't think we really understand how large it is. How long did it take you to get here?
Vin felt a moment of panic, but Sazed's lesson snapped quickly into her mind.
Almost 2 months by canal, with some stops.
Such a long time. They say it can take half a year to travel from one end of the Empire to the other, yet most of us ignore everything but this little bit at the center.
With Reen, Vin had been all across the Central Dominance. It was the smallest of the Dominances, however, and she'd never visited the more exotic places in the Empire. This central area was good for thieves. Oddly, the place closest to the Lord Ruler was also the one with the most corruption, not to mention the most riches.
So, what do you think of the city?
It's dirty.
In the dim light, a servant arrived to remove her empty plate.
It's dirty, and it's full. The Ska are treated terribly, but I guess that's true everywhere.
Ellen cocked his head, giving her a strange look.
I shouldn't have mentioned the Ska. That wasn't very noble-like.
You think the Ska here are treated worse than the ones on your plantation? I always thought they would be better off in the city.
I'm not sure. I didn't go to the fields very often.
So you didn't interact with them very much?
Why does it matter? They're just Ska.
See now, that's what we always say. But I don't know. Maybe I'm too curious, but they interest me. Did you ever hear them talk to one another? Did they sound like regular people?
What? Of course they did. What else would they sound like?
Well, you know what the ministry teaches.
She didn't. However, if it was regarding the Ska, it probably wasn't flattering.
I make it a rule to never completely believe anything the ministry says.
Elland cocked his head again.
You're not what I expected, Lady Valette.
People rarely are.
So, tell me about the plantation Ska. What are they like?
Like Ska everywhere else.
Are they intelligent?
Some are.
But not like you and me, right?
Oh, how would a noble woman respond? And no, of course not. They're just Ska. Why are you so interested in them?
No reason.
Elland sat back in his chair and opened his book.
I think some of those men over there want to ask you to dance.
Vin turned, noticing that there was indeed a group of young men standing a short distance from her table. They looked away as soon as she turned. After a few moments, one of the men pointed at another table, then he walked over and asked a young lady to dance.
Several people have noticed you, my lady. However, they never approach. Lord Venture's presence intimidates them, I think.
They should know that I am anything but intimidating.
Vin frowned, but Elland just continued to read.
Fine.
She turned back toward the young men. She caught one man's eye, smiling slightly. A few moments later, the young man approached.
Lady Renault, I am Lord Melland Lees. Would you care to dance?
Vin shot a glance at Elland, but he didn't look up from his book.
I would love to, Lord Lees.
Vin took the young man's hand and stood. He led her down to the dance floor, and as they approached, Vin's nervousness returned. Suddenly, 1 week of practice didn't seem like enough. The music stopped, allowing for couples to leave or enter the floor, and Lord Lees led her forward. Vin fought down her paranoia, reminding herself that everyone saw the dress and the rank, not Vin herself. She looked up into Lord Lees's eyes and saw, surprisingly, apprehension. The music began, as did the dancing. Lord Lees's face took on a look of consternation. She could feel his palm sweating in her hands.
Why, he's just as nervous as I am. Perhaps even more.
Lees was younger than Elland, closer to her own age. He probably wasn't very experienced with balls. He certainly didn't look like he danced much. He focused so much on the steps that his motions felt rigid.
It makes sense.
Vin relaxed and let her body move in the motions Sazed had taught.
The experienced ones wouldn't ask me to dance, not when I'm so new. I'm beneath their notice. But why is Elland paying attention to me? Is it simply what Sazed said? A ploy to annoy his father? Why, then, does he seem interested in what I have to say? Lord Lees, do you know much of Elland Venture? Don't focus so much on the dancing. My instructor says that it will flow much more naturally if you don't try too hard.
He blushed.
Lord Ruler, how fresh is this boy?
Lord Venture. I don't know. He's a very important person, far more important than I am.
Oh, don't let his lineage intimidate you. From what I've seen, he's pretty harmless.
I don't know, my lady. Venture is a very influential house.
Yes, well, Ellen doesn't live up to that reputation. He seems very fond of ignoring those in his company. Does he do that to everyone?
Lee shrugged, dancing more naturally now that they were talking.
I don't know. You seem to know him better than I, my lady.
Vin felt as if she knew him well, far better than she should know a man after two brief encounters. She couldn't very well explain that to Lees, however.
But maybe. Didn't Renault say that he'd met Elland once? Oh, Elland is a friend of the family.
He is?
Yes, it was very kind of my uncle to ask Elland to watch over me at these parties, and so far he's been quite a dear. I do wish that he'd pay less attention to those books of his and more attention to introducing me, though.
Lees perked up, and he seemed to grow a little less insecure.
Oh, why, that makes sense.
Yes, Elland has been like an older brother to me during my time here in Luthadel.
Lees smiled.
I ask you about him because he doesn't speak much of himself.
The Ventures have all been quiet lately, ever since the attack on their keep several months back.
You know much about that?
No one tells me anything.
Lees glanced down, watching their feet.
You're very good at dancing, Lady Renault. You must have attended many balls back in your home city.
Oh, you flatter me, my lord.
No, really, you're so graceful.
Vin smiled, feeling a slight surge of confidence.
Yes. You're not at all like Lady Shan said.
What?
Nothing. I'm sorry, it was nothing.
Lady Shan. Remember that name.
She prodded Lees further as the dance progressed, but he was obviously too inexperienced to know much. He did feel that there was a tension rising between the houses. Though the balls continued, there were more and more absences as people didn't attend parties thrown by their political rivals. When the dance ended, Vin felt good about her efforts. She probably hadn't discovered much of value to Kelsier. However, Lees was only the beginning. She'd work up to more important people. Lees led Vin back to her table.
Which means I'm going to have to attend a lot more of these balls.
It wasn't that the balls themselves were unpleasant, especially now that she was more confident in her dancing. However, more balls meant fewer chances to be out in the mists.
Not that Sazed would let me go anyway.
Lees bowed and retreated. Elland had spread his books across the table, and her alcove was lit by several more candelabra, apparently filched from other tables.
Well, we've at least got thieving in common.
Elland hunched over the table, making notations in a small pocket-sized book. He didn't look up as she sat. Sazed, she noticed, was nowhere to be seen.
I sent the terraceman to dinner. No need for him to go hungry while you twirled down below.
Vin raised an eyebrow, regarding the books that dominated her tabletop. Even as she watched, Elland pushed one tome aside, leaving it open to a specific page, and pulled over another.
So, how was the aforementioned twirling, anyway?
It was actually kind of fun.
I thought you weren't very good at it.
I wasn't. I practiced. You may find this information surprising, but sitting in the back of a room reading books in the dark doesn't exactly help one become a better dancer.
Is that a proposition?
Elland pushed aside his book and selected another.
It's unladylike to ask a man to dance, you know.
Oh, I wouldn't want to take you away from your reading.
Vin turned a book toward her. She grimaced. The text was written in a small, cramped hand.
Besides, dancing with you would undermine all the work I just did.
Elland finally looked up.
Work?
Yes. Sazed was right. Lord Lees finds you intimidating, and he found me intimidating by association. It could be quite disastrous to a young lady's social life if all of the young men assumed her unavailable simply because an annoying lord decided to study at her table. So I told him that you were simply showing me the ways of the court, kind of like an older brother.
Older brother?
Much older. I mean, you've got to be at least twice my age.
Twice your... Valette, I'm 21. Unless you're a very mature 10-year-old, I'm nowhere near twice your age.
I've never been good with math.
Elland rolled his eyes. Nearby, Lord Lees was speaking quietly with his group of friends, gesturing toward Vin and Elland. Hopefully, one would come to ask her to dance soon.
Do you know a Lady Shan?
Shan Ilariel?
I assume so. Who is she?
Elland turned back to his book.
Nobody important.
Elland, I've only been doing this for a few months, but even I know not to trust a comment like that.
Well, I might be engaged to her.
You have a fiancé?
I'm not exactly sure. We haven't really done anything about the situation for a year or so. Everyone's likely forgotten the matter by now.
Great.
A moment later, one of Lisa's friends approached. Glad to be rid of the frustrating venture air, Vin stood, accepting the young lord's hand. As she walked to the dance floor, she glanced at Elland and caught him peeking over the book at her. He immediately turned back to his research with an overtly indifferent air. Vin sat down at her table, feeling a remarkable level of exhaustion. She resisted the urge to pull off her shoes and massage her feet. She suspected that wouldn't be very ladylike. She quietly turned on her copper, then burned pewter, strengthening her body and washing away a bit of her fatigue. She let her pewter, then her copper, lapse. Kelsier had assured her that with copper on, she couldn't be spotted as an allomancer. Vin wasn't so certain. With pewter burning, her reactions were too fast, her body too strong. It seemed to her that an observant person would be able to notice such inconsistencies, whether or not they themselves were an allomancer. With the pewter off, her fatigue returned. She'd been trying to wean herself off constant pewter lately. Her wound was to the point that it only hurt badly if she twisted the wrong way, and she wanted to recover her strength on her own if she could. In a way, her fatigue this evening was a good thing. It was a result of an extended period of dancing. Now that the young men regarded Elend as a guardian rather than a romantic interest, they had no qualms about asking Vin to dance. And, worried that she would make an unintended political statement by refusing, Vin had agreed to each request. A few months ago, she would have laughed at the idea of exhaustion from dancing. However, her sore feet, aching side, and tired legs were only part of it. The effort of memorizing names and houses, not to mention putting up with her dancing partner's fluffy conversation, left her mentally drained.
It's a good thing Sazed had me wear slippers instead of heels.
Vin sipped her chilled juice. The terraceman hadn't returned from his dinner yet. Notably, Elend wasn't at the table either, though his books still lay scattered across its top. Vin eyed the tomes. Perhaps, if she appeared to be reading, the young men would leave her alone for a bit. She reached over, riffling through the books for a likely candidate. The one she was most interested in, Ellen's small, leather-bound notebook, was missing. Instead, she picked a large blue tome and hefted it over to her side of the table. She had picked it for its large lettering. Was paper really so expensive that scribes needed to cram as many lines to a page as possible? Vin leafed through the volume.
I can't believe people read books this big.
Despite the large lettering, each page was filled with words. It would take days and days to read the entire thing. Reen had taught her reading so that she would be able to decipher contracts, write notes, and perhaps play a noblewoman. However, her training hadn't extended to texts this massive. Historical practices in imperial political rule, the first page read. The chapters had titles like The 5th Century Governorship Program and The Rise of Ska Plantations. She flipped through to the end of the book, figuring it would probably be the most interesting. The final chapter was titled Current Political Structure.
So far, the plantation system has produced a far more stable government than previous methodologies. The structure of dominances, with each provincial lord taking command of and responsibility for his ska, has fostered a competitive environment where discipline is harshly enforced. The Lord Ruler apparently finds this system troubling because of the freedom it allows the aristocracy. However, the relative lack of organized rebellion is undoubtedly enticing. During the 200 years that the system has been in place, there hasn't been a major uprising in the 5 inner dominances. Of course, this political system is only an extension of the greater theocratic rulership. The aristocracy's independence has been tempered by a renewed vigor in obligator enforcement. No lord, no matter how lofty, would be advised to think himself above their law. The call from an inquisitor can come to anyone.
Vin frowned. While the text itself was dry, she was surprised that the Lord Ruler allowed such analytical discussions of his empire. She settled back in her chair, holding up the book, but she didn't read anymore. She was too exhausted from the hours she had spent covertly trying to wiggle information out of her dancing partners. Unfortunately, politics didn't pay heed to Vin's state of exhaustion. Though she did her best to appear absorbed in Ellen's book, a figure soon approached her table. Vin prepared herself for another dance. She soon realized, however, that the newcomer wasn't a nobleman, but a terraceman steward. Like Sazed, he wore robes with overlapping V designs and was very fond of jewelry.
Lady Velette Renault.
Yes?
My mistress, Lady Shan Alario, requires your presence at her table.
Requires?
She already didn't like that tone, and she had little desire to meet with Ellen's former betrothed. Unfortunately, House Alario was one of the more powerful great houses, probably not someone to dismiss offhandedly. The terraceman waited expectantly.
Very well.
Vin rose with as much grace as she could muster. The terraceman led Vin toward a table a short distance from her own. The table was well attended, with 5 women seated around it, and Vin picked out Shan immediately. Lady Alariel was obviously the statuesque woman with long dark hair. She wasn't participating in the conversation, but seemed to dominate it nonetheless. Her arms sparkled with lavender bracelets that matched her dress, and she turned dismissive eyes toward Vin as she approached. Those dark eyes, however, were keen. Vin felt exposed before them, stripped of her fine dress, reduced to a dirty urchin once more.
Excuse us, ladies.
The women departed the table in a stately flurry. Shan picked up a fork and began to meticulously dissect and devour a small piece of dessert cake. Vin stood uncertainly, the terraceman steward taking up a position behind Shan's chair.
You may sit.
I feel like a ska again.
You're in an enviable position, child.
How is that?
Address me as Lady Shan, or perhaps your ladyship.
Shan waited expectantly, taking petite bites of the cake.
Why is that, your ladyship?
Because young Lord Venture has decided to use you in his games. That means you have the opportunity to be used by me as well.
Remember to stay in character. You're the easily intimidated Villette.
Wouldn't it be better to not be used at all, your ladyship?
Nonsense. Even an uncultured simpleton like yourself must see the importance of being useful to your betters.
Vin sat, dumbfounded. None of the other nobility had treated her in such a manner. Of course, the only member of a great house she'd met so far was Elland.
I trust from your vapid look that you accept your place. Do well, child, and perhaps I will let you join my retinue. You could learn much from the ladies here in Luthadel.
Such as?
Look at yourself sometime, child. Hair like you've undergone some terrible disease. So scrawny that your dress hangs like a bag. Being a noblewoman in Luthadel requires perfection, not that.
Vin flushed. There was a strange power to this woman's demeaning attitude. With a start, Vin realized that Shan reminded her of some crew leader she had known, Cayman, the latest of them. Men who would hit a person, fully expecting no resistance. Everyone knew that resisting such men only made the beating worse.
What do you want from me?
Shan raised an eyebrow as she set aside her fork, the cake only half eaten. The terraceman took the plate and walked off with it.
You really are a dull-minded thing, aren't you?
What does her ladyship want from me?
I'll tell you eventually, assuming Lord Venture decides to keep playing with you.
Vin caught just the barest flash of hatred in her eyes when she said Ellen's name.
For now, tell me of your conversation with him this evening.
Vin opened her mouth to respond, but something felt wrong. She only caught the barest flicker of it. She wouldn't have even noticed that much without Breeze's training.
A soother. Interesting.
Shan was trying to make Vin complacent, so that she would talk, perhaps? Vin began to relate her conversation with Elland, staying away from anything interesting. However, something still felt odd to her, something about the way that Shan was playing with her emotions. From the corner of her eye, Vin saw Shan's terraceman return from the kitchens. However, he didn't walk back toward Shan's table. He headed in the other direction, toward Vin's own table. He paused beside it and began to poke through Ellen's books.
Whatever he wants, I can't let him find it.
Vin stood suddenly, finally provoking an overt reaction in Shan as the woman looked up with surprise.
I just remembered that I told my terraceman to find me at my table. He'll be worried if I'm not sitting there.
Oh, for the Lord Ruler's sake. Child, there is no need
I'm sorry,
to-
your ladyship. I've got to go.
It was a bit obvious, but it was the best she could manage. Vin curtsied and withdrew from Shan's table, leaving the displeased woman behind. The terraceman was good. By the time Vin was a few steps away from Shan's table, he had noticed Vin and continued on his way, his motions impressively smooth. Vin arrived back at her table, wondering if she'd made a blunder by leaving Shan so rudely. However, she was growing too tired to care. As she noticed another group of young men eyeing her, she hurriedly sat, plopping open one of Ellen's books. Fortunately, the ploy worked better this time. The young men eventually trailed away, leaving Vin in peace, and she sat back, relaxing slightly with the book open before her. The evening was growing late, and the ballroom was slowly beginning to empty.
The books.
Vin picked up her cup of juice to take a sip.
What did the terraceman want with them?
She scanned the table, trying to notice if anything had been disturbed, but Elland had left his books in such a state of disarray that it was hard to tell. However, a small book sitting beneath another tome caught her eye. Most of the other texts lay open to a specific page, and she had seen Elland perusing them. This particular book, however, was closed, and she couldn't remember him ever opening it. It had been there before. She recognized it because it was so much thinner than the others, so the terraceman hadn't left it behind. Curious, Vin reached over and slid the book out from underneath the larger book. It had a black leather cover, and the spine read, "Weather Patterns of the Northern Dominance." Vin frowned, turning the book over in her hands. There was no title page, nor was an author listed. It launched directly into text.
"When regarding the final empire in its entirety, one certain fact is unmistakable. For a nation ruled by a self-proclaimed divinity, the empire has experienced a frightening number of colossal leadership errors. Most of these have been successfully covered up and can only be found in the metal mines of ferrochemists or on the pages of banned texts. However, one only need look to the near past to note such blunders as the massacre at Devenex, the revision of the Deepness Doctrine, and the relocation of the Renatis people. The Lord Ruler does not age. That much, at least, is undeniable. This text, however, purports to prove that he is by no means infallible. During the days before the Ascension, mankind suffered chaos and uncertainty caused by an endless cycle of kings, emperors, and other monarchs. One would think that now, with a single immortal governor, society would finally have an opportunity to find stability and enlightenment. It is the remarkable lack of either attribute in the final empire that is the Lord Ruler's most grievous oversight."
Vin stared at the page. Some of the words were beyond her skill, but she was able to grasp the author's meaning. He was saying... She snapped the book closed and hurriedly put it back in its place. What would happen if the obligators discovered that Elend owned such a text? She glanced to the sides. They were there, of course, mingling with the crowds, like at the other ball, marked by their gray robes and tattooed faces. Many sat at tables with noblemen, friends or spies for the Lord Ruler. Nobody seemed quite as comfortable when an obligator was nearby.
"What is Elend doing with a book like that? A powerful nobleman like himself? Why would he read texts that malign the Lord Ruler?"
A hand fell on her shoulder. Vin spun reflexively, pewter and copper flaring in her stomach.
"Whoa."
Elend stepped back and raised his hand.
"Has anyone ever told you how jumpy you are, Valette?"
Vin relaxed, sitting back in her chair and extinguishing her metals. Elend sauntered over to his place and sat down.
"Enjoying Heberin?"
Vin frowned, and Elend nodded to the larger, thick book that still sat before her.
"No, it's boring. I was just pretending to read so that the men would leave me alone for a bit."
"Now, see? Your cleverness is coming back to snap at you."
Vin raised an eyebrow as Elend began to gather up his books, stacking them on the table. He didn't appear to notice that she'd moved the weather book, but he did carefully slide it into the middle of the stack. Vin turned her eyes from the book.
"I probably shouldn't tell him about Shan. Not until I talk to Sazed.
I think my cleverness did its job well. After all, I came to the ball to dance."
"I find dancing overrated."
"He can't remain aloof from the court forever, Lord Venture. You're the heir of a very important house."
Elend stretched and leaned back in his chair.
"I suppose you're right. But the longer I hold out, the more annoyed my father will become. That, in itself, is a worthy goal."
"He's not the only one you hurt. What of the girls that never get asked to dance because you're too busy rummaging through your books?"
As I recall, someone was just pretending to read in order to avoid dancing. I don't think the ladies have any trouble finding more amicable partners than myself."
"I didn't have trouble because I'm new and I'm low-ranked. I suspect that the ladies closer to your station have trouble finding partners, amicable or not. As I understand it, noblemen are uncomfortable dancing with women above their station."
Elend paused, obviously searching for a comeback.
"What is it, Elend Venture? Why are you so intent on avoiding your duty?"
"Duty? Paulette, this isn't duty. This ball? This is fluff and distraction. A waste of time."
"And women? Are they a waste, too?"
"Women are like, thunderstorms. They're beautiful to look at, and sometimes they're nice to listen to. But most of the time, they're just plain inconvenient."
Vin felt her jaw drop slightly. Then she noticed the twinkle in his eye, the smile at the edges of his lips. She found herself smiling as well.
"You say these things just to provoke me."
"I'm charming that way." "Ah, Valette. don't let them trick you into taking yourself too seriously. It's not worth the effort. But I must bid you a good evening. Try not to let months pass between balls you attend in the future.
I'll think about it.
Please do.
Elland bent down and scooted the tall stack of books off the table and into his arms. He teetered for a moment, then steadied himself and peeked to the side.
Who knows? Maybe one of these days you'll actually get me to dance.
Vin smiled, nodding as the nobleman turned and walked off, circling the perimeter of the ballroom's second tier. He was soon met by two other young men. Vin watched curiously as one of the men clapped Elland on the shoulder in a friendly way, then took half of the books. The three began to walk together, chatting. Vin didn't recognize the newcomers. She sat thoughtfully as Sazed finally appeared out of a side hallway, and Vin eagerly waved him forward.
Who are those men with Lord Venture?
Sazed squinted behind his spectacles.
Why, one of them is Lord Jast Lakal. The other is a Hasting, though I don't know his given name.
You sound surprised.
Houses Lakal and Hasting are both political rivals of House Venture, mistress. Noblemen often visit with each other in smaller afterball parties, making alliances.
The terraceman paused, turning back to her.
Master Kelsier will wish to hear of this, I think. It is time we retire.
I agree. Oh, and so do my feet. Let's go.
Sazed nodded, and the two of them made their way to the front doors.
What took you so long?
They waited for an attendant to fetch her shawl.
I came back several times, mistress, but you were always dancing. I decided I would be of far more use speaking with the servants than I would be standing beside your table.
Vin nodded, accepting her shawl, then walked out the front door and down the carpeted stairs, Sazed just behind her. Vin really wanted to get back and tell Kelsier the names she'd memorized before she forgot the whole list. She paused at the landing, waiting for a servant to fetch her carriage. As she did, she noticed something odd. A small disturbance was going on a short distance away in the mists. She stepped forward, but Sazed put a hand on her shoulder, holding her back. A lady wouldn't wander off into the mists. She reached to burn copper and tin, but waited. The disturbance was getting closer. It resolved as a guard appeared from the mists, pulling a small, struggling form, a ska boy in dirty clothing, face soot-stained. The soldier gave Vin a wide berth, nodding apologetically to her as he approached one of the guard captains. Vin burned tin to hear what was said.
Kitchen boy. Tried to beg from one of the noblemen inside a carriage when they stopped for the gates to open.
The captain simply nodded. The soldier pulled his captive back out into the mists, walking toward the far courtyard. Vin watched him go, Sazed's hand on her shoulder as if to hold her back. Of course, she couldn't help the boy.
He shouldn't have...
In the mists, beyond the eyesight of regular people, the soldier drew out a dagger and slit the boy's throat. The guard dropped the body, then grabbed it by a leg and began to drag it away. Vin stood, stunned, as her carriage pulled up.
Mistress.
Vin simply stood there.
They killed him. Right here. Just a few paces away from where noblemen wait for their carriages. As if... the death were nothing out of the ordinary. Just another ska. Slaughtered. Like an animal.
Or less than an animal. Nobody would slaughter pigs in a keep courtyard. The guard's posture as he'd performed the murder indicated that he'd simply been too annoyed with the struggling boy to wait for a more appropriate location. If any of the other nobility around Vin had noticed the event, they paid it no heed, continuing their chatting as they waited.
Mistress...
Sazed pushed her forward. She allowed herself to be led into the carriage, her mind still distracted. It seemed such an impossible contrast to her. The pleasant nobility, dancing, just inside a room sparkling with light and dresses. Death in the courtyard. Didn't they care? Didn't they know?
This is the final empire, Vin. Don't forget the ash because you see a little silk. If those people in there knew you were Ska, they'd have you slaughtered just as easily as they did that poor boy.
It was a sobering thought, one that absorbed her during the entire trip back to Felice.
Quan and I met by happenstance, though... I suppose he would use the word providence. I have met many other Terrace philosophers since that day. They are, every one of them, men of great wisdom and ponderous sagaciousness, men with an almost palpable importance. Not so Quan. In a way, he is as unlikely a prophet as I am a hero. He never had an air of ceremonious wisdom, nor was he even a religious scholar. When we first met, he was studying one of his ridiculous interests in the great Heleni library. I believe he was trying to determine whether or not trees could think. That he should be the one who finally discovered the great hero of Terra's prophecy is a matter that would cause me to laugh had events turned out just a little differently.
Kelsier could feel another Allomancer pulsing in the mists. The vibrations washed over him like rhythmic waves brushing up against a tranquil shore. They were faint, but unmistakable. He crouched atop a low garden wall, listening to the vibrations. The curling white mist continued its normal placid wafting, indifferent, save for the bit closest to his body, which curled in the normal Allomantic current around his limbs. Kelsier squinted in the night, flaring tin and seeking out the other Allomancer. He thought he saw a figure crouching atop a wall in the distance, but he couldn't be certain. He recognized the Allomantic vibrations, however. Each metal, when burned, gave off a distinct signal, recognizable to one who was well-practiced with bronze. The man in the distance burned tin, as did the four others Kelsier had sensed, hiding around Keep Tekiel. The five tin eyes formed a perimeter, watching the night, searching for intruders. Kelsier smiled. The great houses were growing nervous. Keeping five tin eyes on watch wouldn't be that hard for a house like Tekiel, but the nobleman Allomancers would resent being forced into simple guard duty. And if there were five tin eyes on watch, chances were good that a number of thugs, coin shots, and lurchers were on call as well. Luthadel was quietly in a state of alert. The great houses were growing so wary, in fact, that Kelsier had trouble finding cracks in their defenses. He was only one man, and even Mistborn had limits. His success, so far, had been achieved through surprise. However, with five tin eyes on watch, Kelsier wouldn't be able to get very close to the keep without serious risk of being spotted. Fortunately, Kelsier didn't need to test Tekiel's defenses this night. Instead, he crept along the wall toward the outer grounds. He paused near the garden well and, burning bronze to make certain no Allomancers were near, reached into a stand of bushes to retrieve a large sack. It was heavy enough that he had to burn pewter to pull it free and throw it over his shoulder. He paused in the night for a moment, straining for sounds in the mist, then hauled the sack back toward the keep. He stopped near a large whitewashed garden veranda and sat beside a small reflecting pool. Then he heaved the sack off his shoulder and dumped its contents, a freshly killed corpse, onto the ground. The body, which had belonged to one Lord Charles Entrone, rolled to a stop with its face in the dirt, twin dagger wounds glistening in its back. Kelsier had ambushed the half-drunken man on a street just outside of a ska slum, ridding the world of another nobleman. Lord Entrone, in particular, would not be missed. He was infamous for his twisted sense of pleasure. Ska blood fights, for instance, were a particular enjoyment of his. That was where he had spent this evening. Entrone had, not coincidentally, been a major political ally of House Tekiel. Kelsier left the corpse sitting in its own blood. The gardeners would locate it first, and once the servants knew about the death, no amount of noble obstinacy would keep it quiet. The murder would cause an outcry, and immediate blame would probably be placed on House Isenry, House Tekiel's rival. However, Entrone's suspiciously unexpected death might make House Tekiel wary. If they began poking around, they would find that Entrone's gambling opponent at the night's blood fight had been Cruz Geffenry, a man whose house had been petitioning the Tekiels for a stronger alliance. Cruz was a known Mistborn and a very competent knife fighter. And so the intrigue would begin. Had House Isenry done the murder? Or perhaps, had the death been an attempt by House Geffenry to push Tekiel into a higher state of alarm, thereby encouraging them to seek allies among the lesser nobility? Or was there a third answer? A house that wanted to strengthen the rivalry between Tekiel and Isenry? Kelsier hopped off the garden wall, scratching at the fake beard he wore. It didn't really matter whom House Tekiel decided to blame. Kelsier's real purpose was to make them question and worry, to make them mistrust and misunderstand. Chaos was his strongest ally in fostering a house war. When that war finally came, each nobleman killed would be one less person that the Ska would have to face in their rebellion. As soon as Kelsier got a short distance from Keep Tekiel, he flipped a coin and went to the rooftops. Occasionally, he wondered what the people in the houses beneath him thought, hearing footsteps from above. Did they know that Mistborn found their homes a convenient highway? A place where they could move without being bothered by guards or thieves? Or did the people attribute the knockings to the ever-blamable Mistwraiths? They probably didn't even notice. Sane people are asleep when the mists come out. He landed on a peaked roof, retrieved his pocket watch from a nook to check the time, then stowed it, and the dangerous metal from which it was made, away again. Many nobility blatantly wore metal, a foolish form of bravado. The habit had been inherited directly from the Lord Ruler. Kelsier, however, didn't like carrying any metal, watch, ring, or bracelet on him that he didn't have to. He launched himself into the air again, making his way toward the Sutwarrens, a Ska slum on the far northern side of town. Luthadel was an enormous, sprawling city. Every few decades or so, new sections were added. The city wall expanded through the sweat and effort of Ska labor. With the advent of the modern canal era, stone was growing relatively cheap and easy to move.
I wonder why he even bothers with a wall.
Kelsier moved along rooftops parallel to the massive structure. Who would attack? The Lord Ruler controls everything. Not even the Western Isles resist anymore. There hadn't been a true war in the Final Empire for centuries. The occasional rebellion consisted of nothing more than a few thousand men hiding in hills or caves coming out for periodic raids. Even Yeadon's rebellion wouldn't rely much on force. They were counting on the chaos of a house war mixed with the strategic misdirection of the Luthadel garrison to give them an opening. If it came down to an extended campaign, Kelsier would lose. The Lord Ruler and the Steel Ministry could marshal literally millions of troops if the need arose. Of course, there was his other plan. Kelsier didn't speak of it. He barely even dared consider it. He probably wouldn't even have an opportunity to implement it. But if the opportunity did arrive...
Him.
He dropped to the ground just outside of the Sutwarrens, then pulled his mist cloak tight and walked along the street. His contact sat in the doorway of a closed shop, puffing quietly on a pipe. Kelsier raised an eyebrow. Tobacco was an expensive luxury. Hoyd was either very wasteful or he was just as successful as Doxson implied. Hoyd calmly put away the pipe and climbed to his feet, though that didn't make him much taller. The scrawny bald man bowed deeply in the misty night.
Greetings, my lord.
Kelsier paused in front of the man, arms tucked carefully inside his mist cloak. It wouldn't do for a street informant to realize that the unidentified nobleman he was meeting with had the scars of Hathsin on his arms.
You come highly recommended.
I am one of the best, my lord.
Anyone who can survive as long as you have must be good.
Lords didn't like the idea of other men knowing their secrets. Informants generally didn't live very long.
I need to know something, informant. But first, you must vow never to speak of this meeting to anyone.
Of course, my lord.
Hoyd would likely break the promise before the night was out, another reason informants didn't tend to live very long.
There is, however, the matter of payment.
You'll have your money, Ska.
Of course, my lord. You requested information regarding House Renault, I believe.
Yes. What is known about it? Which houses is it aligned with? I must know these things.
There isn't really much to know, my lord. Lord Renault is very new to the area, and he is a careful man. He's making neither allies nor enemies at the moment. He's buying a large number of weapons and armor, but is probably just purchasing from a wide variety of houses and merchants, thereby ingratiating himself to them all. A wise tactic. He will perhaps have an excess of merchandise, but he will also have an excess of friends, yes?
I don't see why I should pay you for that.
He'll have too much merchandise, my lord. You could make a clever profit, knowing that Renault is shipping at a loss.
I'm no merchant, Ska. I don't care about profits and shipping. Let him chew on that. Now he thinks I'm of a great house. Of course, if he hadn't suspected that because of the miscloak, then he doesn't deserve his reputation.
Of course, my lord. There is more, of course.
Ah, and here we see it. Does the street know that House Renault is connected to the rumblings of rebellion?
If anyone had discovered that secret, then Kelsier's crew was in serious jeopardy. Hoyd held out his hand.
Insufferable man!
Kelsier tossed a pouch at Hoyd's feet.
Yes, my lord.
Hoyd fell to his knees and searched about with his hand.
I apologize, my lord. My eyesight is weak, you know. I can barely see my own fingers held in front of my face.
Clever.
Hoyd found the pouch and tucked it away. The comment about eyesight was, of course, a lie. No man would get far in the underground with such an impediment. However, a nobleman who thought his informant to be half-blind would be far less paranoid about being identified. Not that Kelsier himself was worried. He wore one of Doxson's best disguises. Beside the beard, he had a fake but realistic nose, along with platforms in the shoes and makeup to lighten the skin.
You said there was more? I swear, Ska, if it isn't good...
It is. Lord Renault is considering a union between his niece, the Lady Valette, and Lord Elend Venture.
Wasn't expecting that. That's silly. Venture is far above Renault.
The two youths were seen speaking at length at the Venture Ball a month ago.
Everybody knows about that. It meant nothing.
Did it not? Does everyone know that Lord Elend Venture spoke very highly of the girl to his friends? The group of nobling philosophers that lounge at the Broken Quill?
Young men speak of girls. It means nothing. You will be returning those coins.
Wait, there is more. Lord Renault and Lord Venture have had secret dealings.
What?
It is true. This is fresh news. I heard it barely an hour ago myself. There is a connection between Renault and Venture. And for some reason, Lord Renault was able to demand that Elend Venture be assigned to watch over Lady Valette at balls. It is even whispered that Lord Renault has some kind of leverage over House Venture.
What happened at that ball tonight? This all sounds very weak, Ska. You have nothing more than idle speculations?
Not about House Renault, my lord. I tried, but your worry over this house is meaningless. You should pick a house more central to politics. Like, say, House Elariel?
Kelsier frowned. By mentioning Elariel, Hoyd was implying that he had some important tidbit that would be worth Kelsier's payment. It seemed that House Renault's secrets were safe. It was time to move the discussion along to other houses, so that Hoyd wouldn't get suspicious of Kelsier's interest in Renault.
Very well. But if it isn't worth my time...
It is, my lord. Lady Shan Elariel is a soother.
Proof?
I felt her touch on my emotions, my lord. During a fire at Keep Elariel a week ago, she was there calming the emotions of the servants.
Kelsier had started that fire. Unfortunately, it hadn't spread beyond the guardhouses.
What else?
House Elariel has recently given her leave to use her powers more at court functions. They fear a house war and wish her to make whatever allegiance is possible. She always carries a thin envelope of shaved brass in her right glove. Get a seeker close to her at a ball, and you shall see. My lord, I do not lie. My life as an informant depends solely upon my reputation. Shan Elariel is a soother.
Kelsier paused as if musing. The information was useless to him. But his true purpose, finding out about House Renault, had already been fulfilled. Hoyd had earned his coins, whether he realized it or not.
Now to sow a little more chaos. What of Shan's covert relationship with Salmon Tekiel? Do you think she used her powers to gain his favor?
Oh, most certainly, my lord.
Kelsier could see the glimmer of excitement in Hoyd's eyes. He assumed that Kelsier had given him a luscious bit of political gossip free of charge.
Perhaps she was the one who secured Alariel the deal with House Hastings last week.
Most likely, my lord.
Very well, Scar. You have earned your coins. Perhaps I shall call upon you another time.
Thank you, my lord.
Hoyd bowed very low. Kelsier dropped a coin and launched himself into the air. As he landed on a rooftop, he caught a glimpse of Hoyd scuttling over to pluck the coin off the ground. Hoyd didn't have trouble locating it, despite his weak eyesight. Kelsier smiled, then kept moving. Hoyd hadn't mentioned Kelsier's tardiness, but Kelsier's next appointment would not be so forgiving.